and all the other trees that were nearby, that were surrounding that tree, they all were being hit by that tree, and they were also shaking quite violently. Actually, our acharyas explains, Sanatana Goswami explains, that actually the whole planet was shaking. All the mountain ranges were shaking back and forward, and there were tidal waves in the oceans because of the shaking of Lord, this very powerful shaking of Lord Balaram. So Dainakasura was there. He was taking his midday nap. So he got rudely awakened. Everything was shaking violently. So he leapt to his feet, wondering, who's the rascal who's come into this forest? My forest. He was such a rascal, such a demon, really, so envious, that he didn't eat any of the fruit, but he wouldn't let anyone come in to take it. Even if birds came flying in and tried to eat the fruit on the trees, somehow he'd kill them. And so he was really an envious rascal. So the fruit would just go ripe on the tree, fall on the ground, and just rot. So Dainakasura, with his other friends, at that time he was in the form of an ass, and his other friends were also. Big ass. In many ways, more ways than one. Might be the right idea. Anyway, so now we'll give a description of the battle that took place, with a few additional notes from, mainly from Garga Samhita. So he rushed at Lord Balaram, because it was Lord Balaram who was causing this so-called disturbance to him. He rushed at Lord Balaram, ran right up in front of him, spun around, so now his back was facing Lord Balaram, and kicked Lord Balaram in the chest with both his rear legs. But Lord Balaram was unmoved. So Dainakasura, he was quite upset. So he came running up again and he did the same thing, but Lord Balaram grabbed his rear legs and he didn't kill him at this point. That comes later. Lord Balaram threw him 8 miles, flying through the air. Then he landed on the ground, he landed on his head. So it hurt his head badly. Well, unconscious. But then he got up, and what did he do then? He attacked the cowherd boys. He was thinking, well, this Balaram seems pretty powerful. So he thought he'd try the cowherd boys. And he assumed a somewhat different form. It's not explained exactly what it was, but it's called a terrible four-horned form. He attacked the cowherd boys. But the cowherd boys, they are very bold. They weren't fazed at all by this. They weren't disturbed. They attacked him. So Sridham carries a stick. The cowherd boys, they carry sticks. Sometimes some cows go wandering off, so they go chase them and sort of bring them back into line with their sticks. So Sridham rushed up to him and hit him with his stick. Subal came up to Dainakasura and punched him. Then Stoka Krishna, he had a rope. They have ropes again when the cows go wandering off. They may tie them up and pull them back. So Stoka Krishna came running up and started whipping Dainakasura with his rope. Then there's one cowherd boy called Arjuna. It's not the same Arjuna as in Bhagavad Gita. So Arjuna, the cowherd boy, and Angsu, they picked Dainakasura up and they threw him. Then Vishal and Rishabha, they came running up to where Dainakasura had been thrown. They ran up to him and they kicked him hard. Then Tejasvi, he jumped on top of Dhenakasura and tried to strangle him. Then Devaprastha came running up and he slapped him in the face. Then one little boy, Varutapa, he didn't know quite what to do. But he had a ball. So he came running up and he threw the ball at Dhenakasura. So then Lord Krishna came and intervened. Lord Krishna came and picked up Dhenakasura and threw him onto Govardhan Hill. That's from Talavan, Govardhan Hill is probably, I don't know, 10 kilometers or so. Threw him onto Govardhan Hill and knocked him unconscious. But then he got up again. Then Dhenakasura uprooted Govardhan Hill and threw it at Lord Krishna. Amazing. Krishna caught Govardhan Hill and threw it back at him. Dhenakasura caught it and threw it back again. And then after a while, Krishna took Govardhan Hill and respectfully put it back in the right place. So then Dhenakasura decided to try Lord Balaram again. So he came running head first at Lord Balaram. Head first, with his eyes open wide. So Lord Balaram grabbed Dhenakasura, grabbed both of his front legs with one hand. This is the description in the Bhagavatam. With one hand, Dhenakasura is coming running at full charge. Lord Balaram grabs his both front legs with one hand and starts spinning him around. So the force of that spinning was so great that Dhenakasura's life was just forced out of his body, and he left his body. So then the Lord threw him up onto one of the big tall trees, and he landed on the top with such force that it knocked the tree over right onto the next tree. So the impact was so great that it knocked that tree over onto the third tree, and it fell over. So you got this domino effect. And Dhenakasura, it's described, he was bouncing from the top of one tree to the next as they were going over, and he ended up on the top of the last tree, which didn't get knocked down finally. So then the other ass demons came and they attacked Krishna. Two possible reasons for that are suggested by Sanatan Goswami. One is that they were afraid of Balaram, seeing what he'd done to Dhenakasura. The other suggestion is that out of affection, Krishna placed himself between Balaram and those demons. So then Krishna and Balaram, they killed all those demons in the same way, spinning them around, hurling them up onto the trees. So the Bhagavatam, and those ass demons were many different colors. Green, red, brown, purple, so many different colors. So they were all sort of spread-eagled over the tops of these trees, huge forms. And it's described, it looked like there were multicolored clouds in the sky. So then the coward boys had wanted to offer the fruits to Krishna and Balaram, but they didn't. They all just then left the forest. You know why? Because all the fruit had become contaminated by the blood of the demons. So then immediately after, forest people, like Aboriginal people, Pulandas and other, they're kind of low class people, they all came back. They were now able to live in the forest again. So they ate the fruit because they're not so concerned. They're Krishna and Balaram, the cowboys, they're Vaishyas, so they have a higher standard. So then, leaving his body, Dhenaka manifested a splendid and handsome dark form, wearing yellow garments and decorated with a forest flower garland. Then a chariot 8 miles long, filled with 100,000 inhabitants of Goloka, decorated with 1,000 flags, rumbling with 1,000 wheels, pulled by 10,000 horses, glorious with 100,000 chamaras, yellow, studded with many jewels, beautiful, traveling faster than the mind, decorated with many jewels and tinkling ornaments, suddenly appeared from Goloka. Then that spiritual person who'd come from the body of Dainika circumambulated Krishna and Balaram, and then, filling all directions with light, he ascended the chariot and went to Goloka. Any comments or questions? Someone wanted to ask a question.
Yes, I wanted to ask a question about Purnamasi in Vrindavan being Yoga Maya, arranging Krishna's pastimes and Tulsi Devi in the spiritual world. Are there any connections between Tulsi Devi and...
Tulsi Devi and Purnamasi? Well, the original form of Tulsi Devi is Vrinda Devi, who's one of the gopis. So she's human form. The Tulsi tree is like a form of her, that Vrinda Devi is the original form. So Vrinda Devi, she helps in two ways. Well, they're sort of connected. One way is she's a messenger. She's the leader of the messengers about Krishna and Radha and Krishna's pastimes. Her team of messengers are parrots. I forget how many she has, but I think there's quite a few thousand parrots. And they just follow Radha and Krishna and come flying back to Vrindadevi and tell Vrindadevi where Radha and Krishna are going. So then Vrindadevi, through her mystic, transcendental mystic potency, she arranges that wherever Radha and Krishna are going next, they're on their way to Radhakund, and they're passing through this place and this place and this place on the way to Radhakund. So Vrinda Devi then arranges that the forest areas that Radha and Krishna are walking through on the way, that they manifest very beautiful scenes for Radha and Krishna. Like, if Radharani is wearing white, then she may make all the trees, whatever type of tree they may be, but she'll make all the trees manifest white flowers. And things like that. So as Radha and Krishna go on their way to wherever they're going, they go through these most extraordinarily beautiful settings, which all enhance their loving exchanges. Yeah, everything's so nice. So that's actually what Vrinda Devi does. She helps by setting scenes in terms of the physical environment that for the enjoyment of Radha and Krishna. Then Purnamasi, her duty is sort of going on a bigger scale at least. She is actually orchestrating the pastimes. Radha and Krishna are enjoying their pastimes together. Suddenly, Jatila appears on the scene. Panic! Radha and Krishna panic! It's a disaster. Now how did she get there? Purnamasi sent her. Not that Purnamasi said to her, why don't you go over there? But, you know, in a subtle, like a mystical sense, Purnamasi guided Jatila to go there. She just felt inspired. Oh, why don't I go there? Or maybe someone came and told her that I heard Radha and Krishna are over there somewhere. So Purnamasi is actually orchestrating on that level all the pastimes all the pastimes of all the devotees. And, yeah, she's creating like social situations, you could say. All sorts of situations. They're mainly social types of situations to enhance Radha and Krishna's pastimes. She also is influencing Krishna's mind so that Krishna can enjoy more. She makes Krishna think in different ways. Meaning, particularly, she makes Krishna forget that he's God and think that he's just one of the bridge busies and, you know, just a regular person. So then, you know, those pastimes are more adventurous. Because if Krishna was aware that he was God, it wouldn't be so much fun. Knowing that it'll all work out. Don't worry, I'm in control. But Krishna, when Jatila comes, Krishna isn't thinking, oh, it doesn't matter. She's just a crazy old lady. And I'm God. You know, why do I need to listen to her? I can do what I like. No. Krishna thinks, oh, what happened? What am I going to do? Like that. So, yeah, Purnamasi is acting more like that. Well, that's her service. And she knows so much about what's going on. That's why in that part of the play that we enacted, Purnamasi was explaining what had happened behind the scenes. Things which the other people didn't know. Why? Because she was behind so much of it. Yeah. Any other comments or questions? Shakti?
What devotional service did he perform? What devotional sentiment did he have to go back to Golokapuram?
In his previous life, he was a devotee. He was a sage. He was a devotee. Yeah. A lot of these demons, previously, they were devotees of, you know, I mean, of some sort. It's explained about Aristasura. It's there, actually, in this book. Aristasura, he was a devotee. But he had this habit. He couldn't sit cross-legged very nicely. So he'd stick his legs out, his feet out, you know. So someone, I think it may have even been Devasamuni, but someone told him that you sit like a bull. So you become a bull. So now he became a bull, but he wasn't a demon. He just took the body of a bull. Did you know what happened? He appeared as a bull in East Bengal. And he got into the association of some other bulls who were demons. And by their association, he became a demon. That's what it says. But actually, he was quite a nice bull to start off with. Some other questions or comments?
Does that mean if you keep reading this pastime, it destroys the mentality we have it?
Yes. Yeah. If you read this book, let's say the introductory first couple of chapters, this book is based on some statements which appear in a book by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He explains all the leelas in which Krishna kills demons. Well, in some cases he doesn't actually kill the person, he just corrects them, like Lord Brahma, Lord Indra. So in all those pastimes where Krishna comes up against some opposing factors, they all represent actually all the main anathas. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that these pastimes are very useful for practicing devotees. That if you really absorb yourselves in them, then in many cases you can understand, it'll help you understand how to overcome the anatha, in many cases. But even if you don't really understand how it's working, But just through reading them, it'll cleanse you of those particular anathas. So he recommends that for practicing devotees, it may be more useful to read these pastimes rather than like Krishna's conjugal pastimes like that, which, you know, to really gain the most from, you have to have made some advancement, really. If you haven't made advancement, then you may even become a little bewildered by reading about those types of pastimes. But these pastimes, they're very useful for practicing devotees. Rani?
Just one last comment. The section that we, the lesson that we had previously, we're talking about dramatic presentations.
Yes.
And I thought it would be interesting for most people to know. And they had the Ramayana in India, the 40 episodes or whatever. It was shown on national TV. The people began to associate or regard the lady that played the part of Sita as Sita herself to such an extent that they actually forced her to take part in politics. They asked her to stand for election.
Really?
And she did. And today, actually I just spoke to Shyamalal outside. She is the leader of one of the leading parties in India. So when they mentioned that they're going to do Krishna in so many volumes, in so many parts, the Indian government refused to show it on national TV because of the influence having.
Really? Interesting. Yeah. Yes, just see. People are such fools, it's inconceivable. So I think we'll end here. Time has marched by. Sorry. Yes. What is Purnamasi's intention? She wants to heighten Radha and Krishna's pastimes, heighten the excitement and the enjoyment by making it more fun, making it more adventurous, making it more exciting. What does she do? Oh, she sees it quite often. She gets extremely angry. Oh my God, does she get angry? She gets so angry. Maybe we'll talk about that some other time. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Hope, not hope, but we can have confidence that if I try my very best to serve Krishna, then even though sometimes it's not easy because this is the material world, I'm very conditioned. So even though it's like that, but if we really try our very best, then Krishna will help us. And in the end, Krishna will take us back to him. Srila Prabhupada said about Lord Chaitanya that if you try during the course of this lifetime to do your very best to serve Lord Chaitanya through spreading his mission, so you try your whole life like that, your very best, and then the time of death comes. So the time of death is there and you're struggling to remember Krishna somehow, a very difficult time. So maybe you're not really able to remember Krishna so easily. But Prabhupada said that if you've served Lord Chaitanya like that, then Lord Chaitanya will come and force his way into your mind and he'll take you back to Godhead. So of course we can't, you know, we can't claim to be advanced devotees or have sufficient qualification that Krishna will really notice us and, you know, that we're qualified to go back to Godhead. We can't say like that. But if we try, if we really try our very best, always follow the principles, always chant our rounds and serve enthusiastically, then Krishna will help us and at the end of this life we can go back to Godhead. And why not? Just see what happened to Putana. Just see. If it was up to the laws of karma, what would have happened to Putana? She would have gone to hell. She would have gone to hell for an awfully long time. She would have had a very miserable future. But Krishna contradicted the laws of karma. On what basis? Just a little bit of devotion. Just a little bit. There's another example which is similar. It's quite similar. Where the person wasn't successful because they didn't have this little trace of devotion like what Putana had. That is the one washerman who Krishna met when Krishna entered Mathura on his way to kill Kamsa. That was the washerman of Kamsa, actually. He was carrying a whole load of freshly cleaned cloth belonging to King Kamsa back to the palace. And Krishna, little cowherd boy, 12, 13 years old, or looking like a 16-year-old, just a young boy, walks up to him and says, "Oh, that's nice cloth. Wouldn't you like to give me some?" So he's just a little cowherd boy. This is the king's cloth. And when we say king, Kamsa, you may not know it, but Kamsa was so powerful that he was powerful like Hiranyakashipu. He had more or less taken over the universe, not just part of India, as one might think from some descriptions. He was so powerful. He defeated Indra. He defeated all the demigods. So he was big, big king. And here's a little cowherd boy walking up and saying, "Hey, wouldn't you like to give me some of his cloth?" So the washerman, you know, he was very proud of his position. He said, "What, you? How dare you? How dare you suggest this? This is the king's cloth." So Krishna didn't appreciate that. So Krishna slapped him in the face and knocked his head off. And then he and the cowherd boys and Balaram, they took the cloth and they went to one tailor who made it up very nicely, and they were wearing that cloth. So Lord Chaitanya actually describes this incident in Chaitanya Bhagavat. And he says that that washerman had performed severe austerities for hundreds of lifetimes to see God. And finally he got to see God. But he had no devotion. Putana didn't have much, but she had a little. But this washerman, he had no devotion. And Krishna killed him too. But he didn't go back to Godhead. He fell down. He merged in the Brahma Jyoti or something of that sort, which is tantamount to going to hell. Even though it appears like liberation, it appears something nice, but actually it's tantamount to hell. So anyway, Putana, because she had a little devotion, she got the position like mother. So we can all, I mean, not that we should be complacent at all, but we should at least have this confidence at heart that if I really try my best, then Krishna will help. You may have heard Prabhupada one time, one devotee asked Prabhupada that you say that if we just chant 16 rounds a day, follow the four regulative principles and engage in service, that at the end of this life we'll go back to Godhead. But she said to Prabhupada, "It sounds too easy. It can't be that easy, can it?" And Srila Prabhupada said to her, "Do you think that I would lie to you? So mercy is there. So much mercy is there. And we can get that mercy. And even though we are, you know, we're not very significant devotees and we may be struggling in so many ways, but Krishna is watching all of us. Krishna knows all of us. And Krishna is caring for all of us, actually." There's one nice story. I've mentioned these stories before, so you probably heard them. There's one very nice story. Prabhupada went to Germany first time, I think it was 1969. There was one boy there, Shivananda. So it was him and Prabhupada together for about 2 weeks. Just imagine living with Prabhupada, just the two of you for 2 weeks. So they, you know, they had a nice relationship going. And at one point, Prabhupada said to Shivananda, Shivananda Prabhu, will you pray to Krishna for me? So Shivananda, you know, he'd been a devotee perhaps 3 years, maximum 3 years, and naturally thought, what, me?